La sonrisa ancha, la lluvia en el pelo, no importaba nada, ibas a encontrarte con él, con él, con él, con él, con él. Son 5 minutos, la vida es eterna en 5 minutos, suena la sirena.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to Te Recuerdo, Amanda, by Victor Jara. Victor Jara, we play that for you today because on this day in 1973, Victor Jara, who was a singer and a protest singer, was brutally murdered in Chile under the orders of the dictator Augusto Pinochet on this day for taking on his regime. So on this day in history, as we play our music interludes, we remember Victor Jara and his music and songs on this day. We are about to have a conversation here, a really interesting thing coming up to Baltimore tonight. There's a documentary film called American Promise, and a book called Promises Kept, Raising Black Boys to Succeed in School and Life. It's a fascinating film about two young men and their families as they are in this upper-class white school in Manhattan, followed for 13 years. And we are going to talk with one of the people who co-created the documentary, and is co-author of the book as well, Dr. Joe Brewster. Welcome to the studio. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here, man.
I love it. I'm sitting in front of a historian. I think I'm going to learn something here.
I love history. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner. You can log on to our Facebook page. It's 410-319-8888. This tonight, where Dr. Brewster and his wife will be discussing the book as part of the Open Society Institute Baltimore's Talking About Race series at the Enoch Pratt Library Central Branch tonight at the Wheeler Auditorium. So we'll tell you that again. Also be on our website. On Cathedral Street, the beautiful library right there. They'll be there tonight at 7 o'clock. An incredible series talking about race that's been going on this town for several years with OSI. So let's just talk from the beginning here. This documentary, this started 13 years ago. Your children. Talk about how this began.
So, you know, I'm a physician turned filmmaker.
You haven't given it for practice, have you?
No. Because one thing you have to know about filmmakers.
You make no money.
Make very little money. But we love film, and we think we understand the power of filmmaking and the power of images that are uncommon. You think about the uncommon image of a black middle class person on television or the news that's not involved in a perp walk.
Right,
so
right.
We decided we were going to make my wife and I. Who's a Haitian filmmaker attorney from Brooklyn. We decided we were going to make film about the world that we live in, which seemed to differ from what we saw on ABC and NBC. The interesting thing about that, when you want to make a film, right, it takes a lot of time. And so you have to find something that really inspires you, something that where you have to go somewhere where people haven't been. My son was accepted to the Dalton School, one of the premier educational institutions that New York has to offer. And they promised us that they would make that school look like the city of New York. Well, imagine that, a school that looks like Baltimore.
And private school at that.
Absolutely. And so we thought we'd turn the cameras on, and they gave us permission to do that. And we began with a lot of hope and a lot of anticipation to film that. And things got complicated. Very complicated. And what we began to face is not only what they call the opportunity gap or the achievement gap, but we began to embrace the power of implicit bias, unconscious racism, perceptions that you might have again about me before I even open my mouth as a black man.
And I, you know, it's painful watching these two young men, your son and Sion and Idris. Did I say his name correctly?
You can say it any way you want.
It's Sion, not Sean, right?
It's Sheyan.
Sheyan.
We call him Shay.
Sheyan.
Hola, wa Sheyan and Idris.
Idris. Okay, got you. We'll do it right then. Idris and Sheyan. So, and your son is Idris.
My son is Idris.
And to have follow them, I'm sure they, and sometimes we're feeling the pain of being followed. for these hundreds of hours of film that you shot?
800.
800 hours of film.
Well, let's start there.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure it's that painful.
Okay.
The reality is that you speak to any 12-year-old, and he's got hundreds of hours of footage. And he shot it himself or his friend, and it's posted online. What we agreed to do is to shoot them with their permission when we could get it. They didn't get permission at 4. They set limits for where we could go or where we couldn't go. The average number of hours shot per month was about 1 hour per month.
Really?
Over a 13-year period. And if you look at the many of the difficult scenes, the cameras actually turned on the parents and
struggled.
It's us parents who are struggling with the way that our sons are being perceived and also with our own perceptions of our son and what they can or cannot do. So it's an equal opportunity camera. But the important thing is that we shed light on something that people rarely see. And if you speak to the boys today, they'll basically speak with pride. And it's another unforeseen opportunity. Is these boys are very introspective.
They are. They are.
And they share feelings. And I think that's something that we need more in the black community, the ability to learn from our mistakes and not be afraid of the dirty laundry, because the dirty laundry is killing us. And while we are worried about what people see, the deck is stacked against you, and you don't even know that what's happening.
So they're both in college now, right? Idris and
both boys are juniors in college.
Right. Wow. And doing well.
Doing well. Idris is a cognitive science and computer science major at Occidental College in California. He went a long way from home. And Olawa Sheyan, Shay, is at York College in Queens, and he's studying graphic arts. The important thing is that although their struggle was difficult and rocky, we benefit from what we call a growth mindset. Failure is embraced and is used to make us better. And both boys, I have no doubt, will reach their dreams, although it would be nice if my son could get a job.
Spoken like a father. But I want to come to the beginning of this, going to the Dalton School. Idris made it through. Idris made it through, and Shay did not make it through, and had to finish in another high school. But, I mean, let's talk about this a minute. When I watched this movie, I remember a dear friend of mine who's passed away. His name is Roy Shields. He was a SNCC worker in the South, and we both started college late. We finished at a very small college. With a lot of wealthy people were there. And I remember Roy's thesis when he graduated. And Roy's thesis was about the difficulties of someone black being in a majority white institution and getting through that, no matter how quote-unquote liberal the institution is or perceives itself to be. And here we have two young men from middle-class black families in this upper-class white institution. Let's talk about the analysis of where you started and where you ended with this.
So it's a very interesting thing. I'm going to speak to liberal at this point because there's a couple of things that the audience needs to know.
Sure.
That liberal communities are sometimes the most difficult communities. If you look at where African-American boys struggle most, it's in the Northeast and the Midwest. States like New York are probably 50 out of 50 in terms of educational achievement of African-American boys. And the common thought is that it would be someplace in Mississippi or South Carolina. It couldn't be further from the truth. And there's several other northeastern states who actually are equivalent to New York. The second thing is that when you move up the socioeconomic ladder, the gap becomes larger. that doesn't mean that a college-educated African, a African-American boy of a family that's college-educated is not going to graduate from high school.
Right.
But when you look at that father versus a white father who earns the same amount of money, the educational gap actually gets larger. Many people attribute that to complacency, a tendency to buy into the fact that we've arrived and to close our eyes to the sort of microaggressions that are occurring on a daily basis. So I think that describes us when we entered this school. You know, we chose the school because we were told it would look like the city of New York. That means that we were going, my son would have a other students who looked like him. We thought we would have teachers who looked like him and appreciated him for who he was, not for what they thought he was going to be. We didn't, and what we discovered is that wasn't the case. And as we attempted to struggle with that and try to educate the teachers and the other parents, we discovered that they weren't listening. So I went to Boston. I spoke to a renowned psychiatrist and mentor. His name is Dr. Alvin Poussin. Mm-hmm. And what he explained to me was that the same thing existed there at Harvard, and that he encouraged us to write about our experience, to share the experience, but also to dig deeper in terms of finding other like-minded parents and faculty and discussing these issues. So the African-American parents that we sought out were not speaking back. They were not communicating. What we learned in retrospect is they were struggling with the same issues. Those boys were all asked to leave that institution.
Were all at, not your son, though.
Not my son. And what we discovered later is other parents who were coming in to the Oliver Scholar and the Prep for Prep and the ABC programs, those parents were really willing to discuss. And we developed monthly meetings where we would talk about teachers and expectations and support our sons emotionally. And what we discovered, those kids began to thrive. At that point, Cheyenne was asked to leave. And you know, the social emotional development of a boy is just as important as academic development.
Yep.
And what we
lose sight of that fact a lot.
Pardon me?
We lose sight of that particular fact a lot.
And there's a couple other developmental scales that we really need to focus on. But what happened is that growth in Cheyenne was so stunted, he needed to go to an environment where he was hugged, supported, loved, and high expectations were ever present. So he moved to a predominantly black Afrocentric high school called the Benjamin Maneker High School in Brooklyn. And that was his redemption. So this film was designed initially looking at the work of Michael Apted and Steve James from Hoop Dreams. So we always had an intention of following them for 13 years. We had no idea what was going to happen. And it's a very interesting thing that the film, it's won a lot of awards, but it's attracted this cult-like following. And we understand later why that is, because many parents identify with what we were going through. So we've had over 1,200 requests from schools around the country. Our book was an Amazon.com bestseller, because what we really realized is that what we needed to do is help parents talk about race. The issue is not what we're going to do as a school system 10 years from now. The issue is, what are we going to do today to not lose another generation? And there are really concrete things you can do. You know, what we hear over and over again is parents say, when is it, like one of the most poignant points in the movie is when my son at 12 says, would I be better off if I were a white boy.
Mm. Yeah, right.
And there's usually not a dry eye in the theater. And people want to know what we said. And what I say to them is that your son starts asking that at 2 and 3. It may not be verbally, but he sees the inequity. And although it's not mentioned, he knows who's going to get the sticker, who's going to be suspended, who's going to be chosen first, who's going to be thought of as the highest jumper or as opposed to the best mathematics student. And so my point is that that we believe that you have to have these kinds of conversations, candid conversations with your kids at a very early age, and you can mitigate against some of this implicit bias.
So folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. We're talking with Dr. Joe Brewster, co-creator of the documentary film American Promise and co-author of the book Promises Kept, Raising Black Boys to Succeed in School and Life. The film will be shown tonight. The conversation will be taking place. Dr. Brewster and his wife will both be here at the Enoch Pratt Library at 7 p.m., the main branch, the central branch on Cathedral Street in the Wheeler Auditorium. Number here now, though, is 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Write to us here, talk@steinershow.org. What is some of this practical advice that you said came out of this for you after all these years of working with your sons, with your son, and Shea, and this dealing with the school? So talk a bit about this practical advice you're talking about.
So first of all, I want to say that it's not simple.
Yeah.
You know that that this is what is happening to African American boys is death by a thousand little
cuts.
Cuts. Right. And so you have to begin to address each one of them. But the one of the things is that the low expectations. And so we develop ways in which to ask more of our sons. You know that when our sons are actually enter school, they're on average a year behind. And so we ask our son, or we read to our son on a daily basis. But the one of the bigger gaps that you see is the affection gap. And so what we tell parents is to hug that boy every day and tell him that he's worth something. So what we're dealing with is something called implicit bias. So implicit bias is when you expect someone to be less than, or you expect someone to do something without really knowing them. And so the question is, how can a parent guard against implicit bias? And you should also know that the low expectations or the quote-unquote racist expectations, unconscious, are shared by African-American parents, because we learned about our sons almost from the same places that whites learn about their sons, from the media, from a history that's not, often inaccurate or one-sided. And so what we have to do is constantly remind our sons that can be great. You can do math. That you can't. It seems simple, but once you stop, the implicit bias takes on. It has to be on a daily basis. When you get to school, for example, then you're not only dealing with your own implicit bias, but the implicit bias of the teachers and the faculty and the staff, and they have to remind it. That's why we tell parents, you know, if you're not showing up in school, four or five times a year, it's up to them to decide who your child is. I know one gentleman, he goes to school on the first day without being requested with his son. He goes with a bow tie and he says, I am Mr. Wilson. This is my son, Mr. Wilson, and he's here to learn. There's no doubt in that teacher's mind that there's a price to pay if he does not learn. So it's a constantly challenging the implicit bias and giving him the tools to do it. But there are many things. I met a wonderful teacher with provisos who was a who taught kindergartners, and she told me that she was unable to get African-American boys to respect her. And so so what we had to do is develop a relationship with her so that she could see that she was part of the problem. When a boy comes in at 4 years old or 5 years old and you haven't, and he doesn't respect you, then you don't know him and he doesn't know you. And so this is a common problem. The lion's share of suspensions occur when these boys are 4 and right. 5 and 6 years right. old. So we work with teachers. We encourage a discussion about race. Many teachers talk about something, adults, and they talked about something called diversity fatigue. So they were tired of discussing race, but what we discovered later on is that they were tired of saying the same things over and over. You uh-huh. can't discuss difficult issues where everyone's going to be offended and angry or and sad in a meeting of 100 people or even 50 people. It's got to be 6. It's got to be 7. It's got to be continued. And overwhelmingly, it's successful. And this is happening all over the country. What we encourage parents to do is develop something called parent clubs. We call them promise clubs. You can find them on our website, AmericanPromise.org. Almost 100 clubs have been started nationwide where parents are sitting with their sons and daughters and involved in this discussion about their academic achievement over a period of 12 years. We asked what they do, what we did in the film. And the evidence, and there are a number of these that existed for quite some time in this area, Maryland, Philadelphia, they've been quite successful.
So we only have about 5 minutes left on our segment, but let me do this. Let me play a quick clip and then go for a quick question, and then we have to
sure.
So this is a clip of Shaun.
People treated me different. Whether they noticed it or not, I did. People looked at me as stereotypical black kid. White kids would ask you about gangs and whatnot, like you're in gang life or you're angry and you're black. I never had a problem being black, but when I grew up and I started being aware of my surroundings, that other people of different ethnicities had different views on me.
School and it's bad, it's hard, and I'm in the sixth grade.
That's just a little bit of the film. It's an incredible film. I just want to say that and the book as well. Let me get a quick call. We only have a few minutes left. Let me get a quick call in here. And Rita in Baltimore, very quick thought for Dr. Brewster.
Oh, yeah, Dr. Brewster. I worked as an aide in a multi-ethnic school in Howard County. And the children that were at the top of the class were the Asians. And I think that it's always going to be discrimination, but you're going to have to look at what your child's doing after school. Are you making your child stay in and play a musical instrument or study? Or are you going to let him go out and bounce a basketball all day and listen to those filthy rap music songs? There are things that we have to do, too. And it's the way it requires discipline and hard work, and you just can't get around it. Can't let your child run up and down the street all hours of night. Well, I see boys, and these are in good neighborhoods. They stand out on that ball court and bounce that ball till 10, 11 o'clock at night. With mothers and fathers and professional people, the Asian children are in the house studying and learning how to play piano. Now, I want you to comment on that.
Thank you for your comment. You should, sounds like you've read my book. But the reality is that there are a lot of things that we can do. And I start off by saying that implicit bias impacts us all. We even have less expectations of our son. You know, if you look at the number of hours that we study or watch television, African-American middle-class families watch over 55 hours worth of television and media a week.
Right.
You know, that's almost as many free hours that we have. And you can look at the communities that study the most, and they'll have the highest academic performance. Now, the question is, how do you get there? You know, how do you go from A to B, right? This has got to be a discussion, and it can't be one in which I'm pointing at you and talking about your inadequacies. I historically, I understand where this is coming from, and it's a very complicated conversation. But we work very hard with parents understanding the need for putting in time. You know, we love basketball also, but I don't even think people understand what it really takes to be a great basketball player. So to be a great student and a great basketball player, you got to put in time. And it's probably the best students are putting in 20 hours a week of study. And that may be light for an academic institution like Dalton.
Well, this is going to be an amazing night. You should not miss this. Both Dr. Joe Brewster and his wife, Michelle Stevenson, will be at the Enoch Pratt Central Branch to show this film, have the discussion with all of us in the continuing Talking About Race series put on by OSI Baltimore, 7 p.m., the Wheeler Auditorium on Cathedral Street. And what's the website for you again?
AmericanPromise.org. But I'd also like a couple of you to follow us on Twitter, @PromiseFilm.
I'll start following you.
Thank you.
I will do that. And we are going out here in this break. We're going to come back with Brian Frosch, who is seeking to become the next Attorney General of the State of Maryland. We're going out with Bobby Short, I Get a Kick Out of You, born on this day in 1924. We'll be right back.
The only exception I know is the case